Hey, what's up, Channel 9? It's Scott Hanselman, and I am wandering around at the Microsoft campus. It's during the MVP Summit. It's kind of a quiet time, so I snuck out, and I came upon Jeff Gerstadt, who was in the hallway. What's up, dude?
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
Chilling. So you are one of the dev leads for Entity Framework.
That's right.
And you are the dev lead for Entity Framework Code First.
That's right.
Also known as the Magic Unicorn Edition.
Yeah. Entity Framework Magic Unicorn.
That's right. Awesome, dude. Were you guys mad when I called it Magic Unicorn?
No, we actually we took one of the program managers and we filled his office with inflatable unicorns.
Did you seriously?
Yeah.
Do you have pictures?
I'll find you one.
Dude, find me a picture. That's awesome.
Okay. We can even get you a unicorn.
Oh, really? That's sweet. Cool. Yeah, I just didn't think that, you know, EFT, what was it, EF? EFCTP, EFCFCTP?
Entity Framework Feature CTP.
It was the feature that set me off. It was just a regular CTP, I would have been okay.
Yeah, well, basically what it was just a collection of forward-looking features that we wanted to add to the Entity Framework, something we think the community should, you know, have in advance of the release to play with, that sort of thing. So that's why it was a feature CTP, but it turned into a whole lot more. It turned into Code First and Magic Unicorn.
That's cool. So, you know, Entity Framework kind of got a bad rap back in, a couple years ago, and it was mostly like model first and database first, right? You have a database,
right.
You make a model, or you spend all your time in this designer, and then you generate a database.
Yeah.
Now there's three ways.
Right. So the initial release of the Entity Framework came out in .NET 3.5 SP1. You know, it did have some ORM object relational mapping capabilities, but I think even in that space, it wasn't successful in really solving a lot of the customer scenarios. It did have the database first and the model first, but even as an ORM, it was missing functionality and it was hard to use. And so when we did Entity Framework 4.0, we cleaned up a lot of the ORM functionality to make it a really good ORM, and we've gotten a lot of really good feedback from you guys about that. But it's still shipped with only database first and model first. So what that means is you could kind of point the Entity Framework at an existing database, would generate this data model for you that you could manipulate in a designer, and generate code from that and start, you know, doing development, doing link queries, that sort of thing, against a database. But we got a lot of feedback about, hey, you know, this is great workflow, that sort of thing, but, you know, what if I don't, you know, care about the database, was one thing. And the other thing was, you know, what if I don't want to do these, you know, designer-focused mapping scenarios? What if I'm really a coder, I model, you know, my thinking is about code, that sort of thing, regardless of whether I have an existing database or not, I want to do things with code. So that prompted us to start, you know, investigating, well, what would it look like to do our modeling and our mapping through code?
Mm-hmm.
And that really evolved into what Code First has become, where you can start by writing classes.
Mm-hmm.
You can start augmenting them with little hints about how you want those to look using data annotations.
Mm-hmm.
When those aren't sufficient to kind of describe how you want your database to look like, you can drop down and use what's called a Fluent API. To kind of further tweak to say, like, hey, I have this class, and really that should point at two different database tables or something more complicated like that. You know, we have that API there. And then Code First takes care of the rest. It looks at your classes, runs a bunch of conventions, builds up a schema of what the database should look like, and then ultimately can even create that database for you if you don't have it. So it's pretty powerful.
So when stuff like this comes out and someone it gets all the press, you know, like it's whatever Scott Goo's excited about that week, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes people freak out because they'll see like Code First in a keynote or whatever.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh man, well I'm all like Model First, and I just got into that, and like suddenly Model First isn't sexy.
Yeah.
I mean, are these three ways like all based on the same Entity Framework, or are these three different whole deals that are all separate?
No, they're actually it's all the Entity Framework, and we actually call it Entity Framework Code First. So everything you do with Code First is actually things that you can do with Model First. And in fact, a big part of what we did with Code First was we took even a fresh look at the API surface of how you interact with the ORM. And that's the DB context API that's typically shown in the keynotes and that sort of thing. And that DB context you can use with Database First and Model First as well. It's just that the part about Code First where you do like the .NET mappings to things in the Fluent API, that's specific to Code First, but everything else, Model First, works Database First, you can do Link, we do the change tracking for you, lazy loading, all the same great features that were in Entity.
So there's this EDMX, there's this Entity
the entity model that exists, no matter which one of those three you pick.
Correct. And it's just that with database and model first, you kind of generate that EDMX ahead of time before you actually run your app. Like, you use the designer. It's kind of a design time thing.
Mm.
Whereas code first builds that EDMX for you in memory the first time you run
your app. That file, what we think of as that file, that model, that exists.
It exists.
You just can't see it.
You can't see it. It just happens kind of under the covers. We generate it for you. Mm. We kind of squirrel it away in a cache to make things fast. And, you know, but that's basically, it's the same technology we're using. We're just exposing it in a different way.
Now, sometimes people will think that, well, this is code first, so this is for toys. And then when it's time to do the enterprise, I'm going to go, like, all model first. And then when I'm really, really serious, like super-duper enterprise, then I'll be database first, because that's when I need a database guy. Is that true, or is that just a myth?
Well, we certainly hear that perception a lot. So, you know, if there's, you know, truth because it's the perception, you know, maybe that's the case. But we also hear of, like, hey, you know, I've got an 8,000 entity model, mm-hmm. and I'm using code first very successfully. And it actually helps in a lot of those cases because, you know, because there's so many conventions, and when you have so many entities, you often have a lot of patterns,
mm-hmm.
you know, naming conventions for what your keys are and that sort of thing. And code first is all about the conventions and the patterns and that sort of thing. So you can actually gain a lot of productivity, even in the enterprise, about, you know, saving time doing your modeling and your mapping,
mm-hmm.
By using the convention-based approach and code first. And it's, you know, all the mapping that you can do with database and model first, you know,
mm-hmm.
for the most part, you can do with code first. Now, there are some exceptions, you know, things that we've talked about on our blogs. Code first doesn't yet support, like, stored procedure mappings, which, you know, is something we get a lot of feedback. It's one of the things that's really high on our priority list to get
mm-hmm.
done. But in the CTP that's out right now, no stored procedure support.
So if I wanted to do something like that, if I wanted to do everything code first and then I hit some limitation like stored procedures,
yep.
can I just make a regular EDMX and do just the stored proc for that one thing?
You can mix and match a little bit. There's a couple things you can do there. You can't have code first classes and an EDMX together. But what you can do is you can have code first generate a significant portion of your model, and you can have it actually output an EDMX file for you that you could look at and open
cool.
in the designer. And then you could add the extra things to you. And again, because it's the once you've done your modeling, the DB context API is what you use. And so you can just take your EDMX and pass it into your context. And
I can still use my classes, though.
Still use your classes.
That's
and that sort
cool.
of thing. We also have a few places in the DB context API where, let's say you hit something like, I want to call a stored proc. Well, rather than being an explicit part of your model, you
mm-hmm.
can drop down and just execute like raw SQL and have the results come back as and put into objects for you. So there are some drop-down points where you can do that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's you know, where it's not there, where we weren't able to add the last couple features because we really want to get code first out there
yeah.
for people to use and put in production. We tried to add, you know, enough places where they could kind of drop down and use a slightly alternative approach or kind of augment what's in code first.
You know, one of the things that I think people like about code first also is that I didn't have to install anything to get it. I mean, the fact that I think code first was like the most progressive NuGet package.
Yeah.
And it's also, by the way, you probably know this, it's the most popular one
yeah.
by like an order of magnitude.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Like, is that because it builds entirely on top of the entity framework and of existing APIs? I mean, it doesn't go in my GAC or change anything. It just drops it down.
Right. That's right. It's code first is a completely additive thing to what's in .NET 4.0. You know, in that, that has a lot of advantages. Like you said, you know, it's something that you can pull down off of NuGet. You know, you can bin deploy it. You know, you don't need an MSI to install it, that sort of thing. Those are all really nice pluses. You know, on the somewhat downside of that, our code first is limited to, you know, it can support what the entity framework supports. So we've gotten a lot of, you know, community feedback about like, hey, why doesn't the EF support enums yet, or the spatial data type, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even when we put out the code first blog post, they're like, well, you know, can code first support enums and spatial and that sort of thing? And the answer is yes, we can, and we will.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that we can't do it until we're able to rev the core entity framework, and that's coming up as well.
Cool. So can you give me like a demo or whatever? I know I like totally grabbed
sure.
you in the hall, but I was like, maybe
yeah,
you had something
yeah.
on your machine you could show me.
Yeah. So I just happen to have Visual Studio open here with a ridiculously large font.
what a cool coincidence that you did that.
I know.
That's very cool.
So here I've just got a console app, you know, program main, that sort of thing. And the way you get started with you know, the Entity Framework, you just start writing code. You just start writing your classes. So I wanted to write a little app about patients in a hospital. So I have patient class here. It's got an ID property. Here I have a name property, and you can see that I decorated that with a string length data annotation saying that this name really should have a string length of 24. And this also has a minimum length in there as well, just, you know, for validation.
And that's
purposes.
The same string length that we use everywhere, like
it's overlaid. System component model data annotation string length.
All right, cool.
And here I have a collection of lab results.
So it's an I collection.
Yeah.
Are there different collections, or do I use a certain kind of anything?
No, so these classes are what we call POCO classes. It's plain old CLR objects, which means they really don't have any dependency on a persistence framework or any special framework whatsoever. So I've used iCollection here. You can use list of T. You can use hash set.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, you can use
I wasn't sure if there. iCollection was special.
Yeah, and you know, because there's POCO and because this is the Entity Framework, I can do neat things. I can just put virtual here.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
So that means I'm opting into lazy loading support in the Entity Framework. So if I've got some of these patients in my database and I bring one back, what lazy loading is the first time I touch that lab results collection, we actually go out under the covers for you and do a query to bring back what should be in that collection.
So virtual is like almost a marker for lazy loading, and it gives you that hook that you need to do that work.
Exactly.
Cool. Okay.
So we can look at the lab result class. It's also pretty simple. You know, it just has an ID property, date the lab was taken, and you know.
And then you'll do any data types, like, you know, I mean, you'll map them automatically to the right thing. Like when I say string, is that nvarchar a billion, or what is that?
Right. So CodeFirst has some conventions for that. So we look at these classes and we try and interpret, you know, a sensible model and a sensible schema for that. So by default, our strings are now mapped to nvarchar 128, but that's something that you can override very easily. You can use string length, and so you can say string length 4000 if you want, you know, a nice big string. Or if you want some more control where there isn't a data annotation, like there isn't a data annotation that says this string should be Unicode or, you know, ASCII, that sort of thing. But our Fluent API does have that capability. So, you know, if you want to see that, I can show you, you know, how we would do that. So the way once you have these classes, the next thing you do is you hook them up in a DB context. So here I've got a DB context, and I'm just kind of writing my own. And I'm saying here, for this context, the set of things that I'm interested in are patients and lab results.
So these are singular, and that's, so, you know, a patient, and that can be whatever you want.
That can be whatever I want.
So that's not generated. You decided what the plural of patients was.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep, this is all my code. Now, another thing that CodeFirst does before we get into that Fluent API mapping is it can help provision a database for you. So here in my app, I don't have any connection strings yet to a database. I haven't told it that, hey, this should go out to the cloud or use SQL Compact or anything like that. But what it does have is it's got CodeFirst, and CodeFirst has this convention where it says, has this context given me a connection string? And if it hasn't, we fabricate one for you. So we use like the context name for the database name. We use SQL Express by default. That's configurable. So if you want it to point at like Compact or, you know, SQL Server or, you know,
it kind of reminds me of Rico Mariani's Pit of Success. You heard about that?
Yep.
Right? I mean, no matter what the user does, it still works.
It still works, yeah. So if I run this application, you know, it's going to create this database called Hospital Context for me in SQL Express, and it's going to make tables for patients and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And it does that by using what's called a database initializer. And you can set those so that, you know, really only create the database, you know, every time, you know, the model changes, or should we drop and recreate the database every time, or should we use no initializer, just go to an existing database? Because we actually hear a lot of people using CodeFirst with existing databases just because they like this means of mapping and the convention-based approach. And they find that the, you know, the Fluent API is, you know, rich enough for them to be able to map kind of a lot of different kind of CLR, .NET class patterns to the database. So I've got this context in here. You know, the way I get started using it is I, you know, just do using var db equals new hospital context. And then you can do things like, let's add a patient. So we do add a new patient, and we'll give the patient a name, Jeff. And then we'll save that change.
And then the using, this is where the database gets closed. That gets disposed and everything, the connection gets closed.
Right. So what happens is the first time we instantiate one of these contexts in the app domain, we will create that connection string. We'll say, hey, does the database exist? If it doesn't, we'll make it for you, and you're ready to go. So if I ran this, I would get the database. But let's before we do that, let's jump down and let's take a look at that Fluent API to mm-hmm. make that non-Unicode change to make name an ASCII string.
Okay.
So the way we do that.
So I'm saying I don't want Chinese characters. I just want ASCII characters.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So
that's kind of a low-level database type thing. That wouldn't be the kind of thing I would have expected to have control over.
Yeah. So if you go back to your context class, there's an override in here called on model creating, and what that gives you is this model builder, which helps you define, you know, advanced things about your model and your database model. So the way a Fluent API works is it's very strongly typed, and you kind of start telling it about the entities and the properties on them. So mm-hmm. you can say, model builder, hey, there's an entity called lab result. And on that lab result, there's a property.
Now, that's interesting. So just hang on here, because you hit enter, you don't have a semicolon there, you hit dot, so you're still on the same line of code here.
Yep, so Fluent APIs, it's about chaining methods together mm-hmm. to kind of make sentences for what you really want to trying to express.
Okay.
So here I've got this lab result, and I'm actually going to use a lambda, and if I do that, I get a nice strongly typed experience, and I can see the properties that, you know, are in the lab result. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to pick...
I call that an Anders.
An Anders,
this is,
right there.
This is such as, people say... A property R such as, you know, such that rather, R dot, I say R Anders. I'm trying to get that to take off. That's my new thing after Magic Unicorn.
Okay.
So make sure you
That's
call that when you're muttering to yourself when you're writing code, you just say R property Anders.
Awesome.
okay.
So now we're telling it there's a property there.
Okay.
And now when we hit dot, again, the Fluent API says, hey, result is a string property. So I'm going to give you a bunch of methods about...
So this will be different depending on what the type result was.
If you got an if you had an integer in here, max length doesn't make any sense. So we wouldn't have that method there.
Okay.
But you can see there's methods in here about setting the column name, column order. If you want to manually change the column type,
mm-hmm.
You know, you can make it a fixed length string. So rather than an nvar char...
that
sort of thing. Make it variable length, then you can say, hey, this thing's Unicode, and just say, nope, not Unicode. So there you go.
And that changes the value of that on the property in SQL Server itself.
Right. So now that we've kind of made all of our model changes, that kind of thing, let's step through the program.
Mm-hmm. And I could use other things. I could use Oracle or whatever if I wanted to. Right?
Yep, that's one of the nice things about being based on the entity framework is it does have a provider model, and we do have a fairly rich provider ecosystem. Oracle actually just released, I believe, a beta of their latest entity framework provider.
Mm-hmm.
DataDirect has a bunch of providers as well.
Cool.
It's getting pretty rich, you know, the number of databases we support.
Okay.
So create that context, add the patient, and at this point, you know, we said, hey, there's no database there. We'll create one for you. We'll add that record in there. We'll save the change. So let's hop over to SQL Management Studio and look at, like, well, what did this actually do? So these are the databases I had before. I just had, you know, Microsoft Standard Northwind.
Right. We get that when we get our badges, when we come to work at the company.
They give us Northwind. So now when I refresh, I see, hey, it gave me a new database, and it's named just after my context,
mm-hmm.
and I can peek in here at the tables, and I see a couple tables, and I see a table called patients,
mm-hmm.
I see a table called lab results. So let's look at patients first. We can drill into the columns, and we see, yep, it identified that, you know, ID was in fact the primary key, and that's one of the conventions in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we can see that there's name in here, and it's an nvar char 24 because we put that string length attribute on
it.
And if I hop up here and look at lab result and drill into those columns, you know, I can see, again, it found this ID, the primary key, date taken, and here's result where we used that Fluent API to make it a var char rather than an nvar char.
How can I, do I like right-click and say properties? How do I know that that's not Unicode?
The N in front of it is the N kind of in SQL parlance, mm-hmm. means Unicode.
So varchar means not.
Not var,
correct.
Unicode.
Okay, cool.
And it also found this and created this foreign key for us. So I had that collection of lab results on each patient.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that represented was, hey, I think, you know, there's a relationship between these two tables. And so we fabricated this foreign key for you to help support that relationship.
And you did that just based on the name?
Just based on the name, that's right.
I suppose if I didn't use your convention, I could say that there was a foreign key with an attribute or something.
Absolutely, yeah.
Very cool. So when are we going to get to play with this stuff? I mean, we can do this now, right? I know, right. I've been playing with CTP5, I think.
Yep. So CTP5's been out. We released that in the beginning of December last year.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to release a release candidate, which is nice because it's going to have a go-live license. You'll be able to put your apps in production, and that'll be coming out very shortly, in the month of March, and then probably have about a month turnaround, and we'll get the RTM version out. So, you know,
cool. So we can start working on this now and go live summertime. We're going to be all set.
Yeah, or, you know, probably the spring, you'll be able to go live with it.
That's great. And one last question before I let you go. People have been asking a lot about migrations. Like, what happens when I change this model and I don't want to recreate my database? What can I do today and what can I do tomorrow?
Yeah, so what CodeFirst has in it today are the database initializers, and we've got some built-in ones that, you know, will drop and recreate your database, or we'll throw an exception if we see that the model's changed. That's what you can do today.
Mm-hmm.
But migrations is one of the things that, you know, customers saw that, they liked it, but number one ask for CodeFirst is migration support. You know, we hear that, and we also hear that kind of in the same vein, hey, we really need a migration solution around CodeFirst, but don't hold up the first release for it. Just give us the bits and then kind of add that as a follow-on. And that's exactly what we're planning on doing. So it's at the top of our list for things that we do after we get that first release out. And, you know, we're working kind of, we got a couple people working on it already.
Cool. Rock on. Thanks a lot. Oh, dude, what's your shirt say?
It's an entity framework, V2 squared, which is EF4, which is what's in .NET 4.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks for hanging out.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks,
Matt. We'll see you at Channel 9.